As the Byzantine presence in northern Italy waned and vanished, the Duchy of the Venetians was the only Byzantine territory left. Outside direct imperial control, the Venetians had to find their own way. And it wasn't easy. Early Venetian politics was therefore often turbulent, factional, violent, and deadly. Welcome to the Venetian Stories podcast. I'm René Sandal, and I'll be your guide on this journey. This podcast is generously sponsored by my wife. You can help by recommending it to others, sharing it online, or adding reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you come to Venice, you can support me and the podcast by booking one of my Venetian history tours. You can find them on historywalksvenice.com. Otherwise, visit venetianstories.com for more options. Episode 34. The Duchy of the Venetians. At some point, probably in the late 720s, during the rebellion following the iconoclast edict of Leo III, the Venetians chose their own leader for the first time. As far as we can deduce from our scarce sources, that Venetian doge was Ursus in 726. He reigned for 11 years. Under his leadership, the Venetians helped the Byzantine exarch recover his capital Ravenna, which the Lombards Hildebrand and Perideo had taken, probably either in 732 or 735. Which are the years most often mentioned in the literature. Ursus is traditionally attributed the Byzantine title of Hippatos, which he might have earned on that occasion. He was killed in 737 by his own, with bitter jealousy, as John the Deacon wrote. This is all we know of Doge Ursus. And it is all from the Historia Veneticorum by John the Deacon. It is essentially the only source we have for Venetian internal affairs in the 700s. Consequently, almost everything in this episode is based on the Historia Veneticorum, and to a lesser extent on the much later Chronica Extenta by Doge Andrea Dandolo, which is from the 1340s. After the murder of Duke Ursus, something odd happened. The Duchy of the Venetians ceased to have dukes for 5 or 6 years. Instead, the province was governed by a military commander, a magister militum, or master of the soldiers, serving one-year terms. John the Deacon, starting with the assassination of Ursus, wrote, quote, "Whereupon later the Venetians, killing him with bitter jealousy, wished that for a period of 5 years they should remain subject only to the masters of the soldiers." End quote. Andrea Dandolo, writing almost 6 centuries after the facts, elaborated a bit more. Quote, "Because the Venetians, upon the death of their duke, were discordant in the promotion of a new duke, they decided to have for themselves a ruler for 1 year, whom they called Master of the Soldiers. This dignity, according to the usage of the Greeks, was greater than that of the tribunate, and held authority over them and the entire populace." End quote. This is the traditional Venetian narrative, in which the Venetians decided for themselves how they wanted to be ruled. In this narrative, the tendency is to leave the Byzantines entirely out of the history of Venice. To claim their independence, they refuted to have ever been under the empire. It's not true, however. The Duchy of the Venetians was a Byzantine province, under the Exarchate of Ravenna. Byzantium mattered for better or for worse. And while the Venetians could be part of a rebellion in one situation, in another, they would support the empire with all the resources they had. None of the traditional sources have much to say about the individual Magisti Militum, besides their names and that they each served 1 year. The first two are only known from this context, as are the family names they are given by some sources. We don't know whether they were locals or outsiders. The third was Deus Dedit, who was the son of Ursus Hippatos, the murdered duke. According to one source, the Chronicon Altinade, he served 2 terms of 1 year. The last two Magistri Militum were like the first two, otherwise unknown. The fifth was deposed by the Venetians before his term was up. John the Deacon wrote, quote, "In a similar way to the others, he held the command for the space of 1 year, and his eyes were also gouged out by the Venetians." End quote. And Andrea Dandolo, quote, "Here Johannes, not yet having completed the year honorably, was deposed by the Venetians and deprived of his sight." End quote. So, for 5 or 6 years, the Venetians were governed by a military leader, a Magister Militum, master of the soldiers, who served for 1 year, and who are otherwise unknown to our sources. The only exception was Deus Dedit, who was the son of the slain Duke Ursus, and who, according to the Chronicon Altinade, served 2 years. Andrea Dandolo, in the Chronica Extensa, wrote that Deus Dedit had been exiled by his father's killers, but was allowed to return by the second Magister Militum before serving himself as the third. There are 2 opposing interpretations of why this happened, and given the scarcity of sources, there's no way to decide which one is more likely. The first interpretation is that of a Byzantine backlash following the unauthorized rise to power of Ursus during the anti-iconoclast rebellion around 727. In this model, the Venetians had chosen Ursus as their duke during the rebellion, as the Liber Pontificalis for Gregory II recounted. Soon after, the patrician and eunuch Eutychius had replaced the slain Paulus as exarch and set about restoring order to the exarchate. However, before he could do something to bring the Venetians, with their illegitimate duke, back in line, Ravenna was attacked and taken by Hildebrand and Peredeo. Eutychius was forced to flee to Venetia, where, with the backing of the Pope, he asked the Venetians for help. The Venetians, led by Duke Ursus, successfully provided that assistance and placed Eutychius back on his throne in the palace of Ravenna. Being indebted, Eutychius couldn't force a replacement of Ursus in the Duchy of the Venetians, and instead awarded him the title of Hippatos in an "if you can beat them, join them" move. When Ursus was assassinated in 737 on the traditional timeline, Eutychius grabbed the opportunity to restore Byzantine order to the duchy and swiftly appointed a trusted Byzantine commander to head the province, but only for 1 year term, to keep Venetia on a leash, so to say. In an attempt to placate the unruly locals, the son of Duke Ursus was allowed back to the duchy and given the post of Magister Militum for 1 or 2 terms, but then Eutychius reverted to appointing outsiders. In the 5th or 6th years of this order, something snapped, and the Venetians rebelled, blinded the fifth Magister Militum, and chose Deusdedit as their doge, in opposition to the Exarchate, as with his father. On the traditional timeline, this happened in 742, when the Exarchate was in trouble again. King Liutprand was raiding and pillaging much of the Exarchate, and Eutychius and Archbishop John VI had to turn to Pope Zachary for help. The other interpretation of the interlude of the Magistri Militum is that of a local Venetian reaction to Byzantine control and influence over the duchy. In this reading of events, Ursus became duke in the wave of anti-Byzantine sentiments which rose during the reaction to the Iconoclast Edict. Ursus, however, switched side, or was perceived by parts of Venetian society to have switched side, when Eutychius arrived in Venetia asking for help against the Lombards. He went with what forces Venetia could muster, succeeded, and was rewarded afterwards by Eutychius. Consequently, the anti-Byzantine faction within Venetian society rose against Ursus, and he was killed and his son Deusdedit exiled. Unable to agree on a successor, the victorious faction compromised by choosing a leader for just 1 year, and by using another title than that of duke. Within a few years, Deusdedit was allowed to return from exile, and then to serve as Magister Militum for 1 or 2 years. This reversal could be due to a shift in the internal power balance between the factions, or it could be an attempt at compromise. In any case, the faction of Deusdedit grew in strength, and 2 years later, they had the fifth Magister Militum deposed and blinded, and replaced by Deusdedit as the fourth Duke of the Venetians, succeeding his father. Both John the Deacon and Andrea Dandolo emphasized in their narratives how the Venetians, before the first Doge, had been governed by the tribunes of the individual lagoon settlements, who served 1 year terms. This interpretation of the period of the Magistri Militum could be seen as a return to such a style of government, but it doesn't explain why the Venetians chose a very Byzantine title. Dandolo wrote that the Greek title was more prestigious, while John the Deacon ignored the question altogether, just as he, in general, ignored any Byzantine influence on Venetia. Deusdedit, or Teodato, therefore became the fourth Duke of the Venetians in 742 in the traditional reckoning. Given how terse and scarce our sources are, here are all John the Deacon has to say of the 13 years of rule of Deusdedit and the 1 year rule of his successor, Galla. Quote, "At the same time, the Venetians, abhorring the esteemed dignity of the prefects, again, as before, chose a duke for themselves, namely Deusdedit, the son of Ursus the Hippatos, on the island of Metamauco. His rule lasted for a period of 13 years. He himself, after this, for the sake of honor and reputation, wished to build a fortress called Blondolo, not in its current location, but beyond the present bank of the river. And there, by a certain unfaithful man named Galla, his eyes were put out and his duchy was taken. And he, that's Galla, was the possessor of the position for 1 year. Over him, then, the Venetians, attacking and conspiring together with one mind, likewise plucked out his eyes." End quote. Even though the text is short, there's quite a bit to unpack. Firstly, we have now seen three successive rulers of the Venetians being blinded and deposed, but in neither case do our sources state that the person was killed. blinding and deposing a ruler, but not killing them, was a very Byzantine way of doing a palace coup. And it is one of those situations where the Byzantineness of the early Venetians show clearly. Even if the chronicles don't say so explicitly, blinding an enemy by gouging out their eyes or burning them with an incandescent poker was in effect almost a death sentence. Such wounds were very likely to get infected, and medieval medicine generally wasn't up to the task of treating them. While some survived for longer, most victims perished after a few months, if not sooner. The deposition and mutilation of three successive rulers is also a clear sign that Venetian politics was deeply factional and very violent. Whatever their concerns and priorities, interests and feelings ran strong enough to have them resort to extreme violence to obtain power. Secondly, John the Deacon specified that the appointment of Deusdedit happened at Metamauco, not at Heraclea. Till around 640, when the Lombards took Opitergium on the mainland, the government of Venetia had been based at Heraclea, in the estuary of the river Piave, on an island in a lagoon which has since silted up. So the modern location of Heraclea is on the mainland, north of the current lagoon. Duke Ursus and the Magistri Militum, including Deusdedit, ruled from Heraclea. At least we have no sources indicating that they didn't, and Heraclea was the capital of the Duchy of the Venetians. It is very likely that both Ursus and Deusdedit came from Heraclea, and that it was in Heraclea Ursus was assassinated and the fifth Magister Militum blinded. However, the assembly which chose Deusdedit met at Metamauco, which was somewhere around where Malamocco is today, on the southern part of the Lido di Venezia, or on a lost island nearby. In the early Middle Ages, the river Miduacus, which passed Padua on the mainland, had its estuary in this area. It is therefore quite common in ancient texts to see Metamauco associated with refugees from Padua. Not only was Deusdedit appointed at Metamauco, he also placed the seat of government there, relegating Heraclea to a secondary role. The tension between families from Heraclea and from Metamauco was one of the fault lines within Venetian society. And while none of our sources explained why this move happened, it might be related to the violence which often broke out between various Venetian factions. Other sources, such as the Chronicon Altinate, recount several episodes of almost civil war between the residents of Heraclea and the residents of Equilio Gesolo, allied with the people of Metamauco. The two settlements were geographically very close, and both were bishoprics, and apparently they hated each other. Finally, Deusdedit was deposed. While he was at the southern end of the Dugato at Brondolo, which was on the river Brenta, overseeing the construction of a fortification. This is the first time any source tells us of Venetians acting on their own behalf in the defense of the Dugato. Such defenses would earlier have been the responsibility of the exarchate. According to the traditional chronology, Deusdedit ruled until 755. The Lombard king Aistulf definitively defeated and occupied the exarchate in the years 750 to 752. Consequently, such a fortification at the southern end of the Dugato could only be to protect the Dugato from the Lombards. The Byzantines weren't around anymore, and the Franks hadn't arrived yet. de Largitio Astolfina, in which King Aistulf reconfirmed an old agreement which defined the borders between the Dogado and the Lombard territories, might have been issued to reassure the Venetians that the Lombards had no ill intentions. We do not, however, have a precise date for the Largitio, beyond the years of Aistulf's rule as duke and king, which is between 745 and 756. Nevertheless, the fact that the Venetians were actively fortifying their territory is a clear sign that they didn't expect any kind of help from Byzantium anymore. Galla, the successor of Deusdedit on the ducal throne, was the fifth doge of the Venetians. We do not, however, know more about him than what John the Deacon wrote, which I quoted earlier. Galla deposed and blinded Deusdedit, usurped the title of duke, but was in turn deposed and blinded by the Venetians with one mind after a little more than 1 year. It is a bit amusing how John the Deacon tried to give the impression that the Venetians acted in unison, as one, in harmony, all the while they were ferociously killing and mutilating each other. Galla ruled from 755 to 756. The sixth doge was Domenico Monegario. John the Deacon awarded him one paragraph, but with a few interesting points. Quote, "In his place, Dominicus, surnamed Monegarius of Metamauco, was made their duke, and, as is the custom of the common people, who never persist in any given intention, but, driven by a certain superstitious folly, invent one idea after the other, in the first year of his duchy, they appointed for themselves two tribunes, who would serve under the ducal decree. This they also tried to carry out every year of the aforementioned duke's life. Then the aforementioned Venetians, having made a conspiracy, plucked out the eyes of the same duke, Dominicus, and the years of his duchy amounted to 8. End quote. Firstly, the seat of the duchy was still at Metamauco. Domenico was the third successive doge ruling from there. Secondly, there appears to have been an attempt at curbing the power of the duke by flanking him with two tribunes serving 1 year terms. There was clearly a realization that having all power invested in one man alone was not necessarily the best way. And the solution they chose was based on how local government in the duchy had always worked, with tribunes for 1 year terms. John the Deacon dismissed this idea as a folly of the uneducated lower classes, but I think that's entirely on him. He lived in a time when Venetian politics were slightly less volatile and fewer doges were mutilated and killed. So he might not have seen the purpose of such tribunes, or he might have believed so firmly in the almost autocratic rule of an enlightened aristocratic doge that such checks and balances to him were an abomination. Nevertheless, despite the attempts at limiting the power of the duke, something went wrong. As before, the Venetians, all united harmoniously, as of one mind, deposed the duke and blinded him. Domenico consequently ruled from 756 to 764. The seventh duke of the Venetians was Mauritius, or Maurice, or Maurizio, who was later given the family name of Galbaio. His son, John, or Johannes, or Giovanni, was later made co-ruler, and then succeeded his father as the eighth duke. Between the two, they ruled until the end of the century. This is the first time there's any semblance of stability in Venetian politics, at least for a few decades. Let's follow John the Deacon as before. He is, after all, the earliest source we have and the source of most of the other chronicles. Quote, after the aforementioned deposition of Domenico, during which the entire attendance of the Venetians was gathered, a certain citizen of the city of Heraclea, named Mauritius, very skilled in secular matters, was elevated to the honor of the duchy on the island of Metamauco. End quote. So the new Duke Mauritius, an able politician, was from Heraclea, but was elected at Metamauco. It is not entirely clear where he established the seat of government, as none of our sources go into any detail of the matter. Did he move it back to his native Heraclea, or did he move to Metamauco to rule from there? We cannot really know, but both John the Deacon and Andrea Dandolo hint that his son John, who succeeded him, was acclaimed at Metamauco. That points in the direction of Metamauco as the capital of the duchy, even for two doges who were natives of Heraclea. Mauritius did, however, try to reduce the importance of Metamauco within the duchy. Quote, while he wisely and honorably managed the affairs of the Venetians in all matters, in the 11th year of his duchy he decreed, by apostolic authority, that a new bishopric should be established on the island of Olivolo, in which he ordained a certain cleric named Obeliabatus as bishop. End quote. The island of Olivolo is at the easternmost end of modern-day Venice, where the church of San Pietro in Castello stands. The diocese of Olivolo was established in 774 with permission of the Pope in Rome, but subject to the Patriarch of Grado, who was the head of the Venetian church. John the Deacon didn't say which areas became part of the new diocese, but Andrea Dandolo, in his Chronica Extensa, was quite explicit that the territory was taken from the bishopric of Metamauco, and that it included the islands of Gemini, Rivo Alto, Luprio, and Dorso Duro. Together with Olivolo, these ancient settlements were all in the Laguna area, which is now the city of Venice. Well in line with his anti-Byzantine sentiments, John the Deacon also omitted another detail, which he almost certainly knew. Fortunately, we do have the letter. Sometimes between 768 and 772, Giovanni the First, Patriarch of Grado, wrote to Pope Stephen the Third to denounce Lombard harassments of the dioceses of Istria. In this very long letter, we have, quote, Mauritius, consul and imperial duke of this Venetian province, end quote. This wording can only mean that Venetia was still considered a part of the Byzantine Empire. Here, consul means the Byzantine title of Hippatos, which Ursus had too. The words imperial duke could sound like the empire had appointed Mauritius. But given that he was a local, and that the empire had no real presence in the area anymore, it's not very likely. It is far more probable that Mauritius was appointed locally and that the empire had recognized the appointment to keep up appearances. Such a partly fictitious belonging to the empire would make sense for both sides. If the empire ever wanted to launch a counteroffensive to take back the lands of the former exarchate, the lagoons in Venetia would be a perfect staging area. For the Venetians, nominally belonging to the empire, could be a deterrent for the Lombards, and later the Franks, in case they should get ideas. Both sides therefore had an interest in keeping up appearances. John the Deacon omitted another detail, which Andrea Dandolo didn't fail to mention. from the Chronica Extensa. Quote, Mauritius was proclaimed Duke in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, 764. He, born in Heraclea, noble by birth, and more noble for his illustrious deeds, was now made Duke at Malamocco, who, exercising just rule, reconciled discordant citizens, and from the Italian disturbances imminent at his time, preserved the Venetian homeland unharmed. End quote. The discordant citizens are no doubt a reference to the factionalism and subsequent violence. Mauritius managed to keep the peace within the duchy to reconcile the various factions. Those Italian disturbances, on the other hand, was the Frankish conquest of the Kingdom of the Lombards. After 774, the Venetians no longer had to worry about being the neighbor of a regional power in the Kingdom of the Lombards. Venetia now bordered on a power which was an order of magnitude larger than the Lombards, which, within a generation, would become the Carolingian Empire, and later the Holy Roman Empire. Returning to John the Deacon, he continued, quote, then, when he had held the ducal dignity for 31 years, already advanced in age, at the people's urging, he was pleased to have his son John share in his honor. 2 years later, with his son, he thus ended his final day in peace. End quote. Andrea d'Andolo only gave Mauritius a reign of 23 years, but they agreed that he wasn't deposed and he wasn't blinded. He lived peacefully to the end of his days. Another novelty, which was introduced here for the first time, was to have two dukes simultaneously, father and son, to ensure the succession. Andrea d'Andolo, writing with ample hindsight, commented, quote, and thus they began to have two dukes at the same time, leaving to the successors a disastrous outcome of affairs. End quote. In fact, having one family entrenched in a position of power didn't play well with the factionalism of Venetian politics. And as dynastic succession became common, political violence followed. What is evident, however, is that Mauritius was held in such high esteem for his management of the duchy that his request to be helped and then succeeded by his son was accepted. John the Deacon continued, moreover, in the year of our Lord, 823, John, the aforementioned son of Mauritius, assumed the peak of honor in governing the same island. We have discovered neither in writing nor in report that he managed the affairs of his country well. Indeed, he had a son named Mauritius to whom in the 18th year of his duchy he granted the partnership of the same dignity. End quote. The chronology of John the Deacon is totally off, and so is the year he gave here. According to Andrea d'Andolo, John Galbaio became Duke in his own right in 787 when his father died. John the Deacon rarely wrote in the first person, but he did here. And in its understatedness, his judgment of the reign of John Galbaio is scathing. Quote, we have discovered neither in writing nor in report that he managed the affairs of his country well. End quote. Andrea d'Andolo, with his customary hindsight, wrote, quote, Duke John held the duchy alone in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, 787. After the death of his father, he held the scepter alone at Metamauco, but, unlike his father in word and deed, did not manage the affairs of the country well and undertook ruinous endeavors. End quote. Those ruinous endeavors will be the beginning of a later series of events, so I'm going to interrupt this narrative of the early Doges of Venice here for now. Don Galbaio ruled until 804, so we've been through about half a century of early Venetian politics. As a polity, a nascent state, this was how Venice started. There was no plan, no declaration of independence. There might not even have been a desire for independence, and there was no assembly debating what kind of society they wanted. Over a few decades, the exarchate waned and vanished, and the Venetians were left on their own and had to make the best of it, whether they liked it or not. They had a territory of roughly 130 by 15 kilometers from Grado to Cavarcere of defensible but not very productive land. The mainland was entirely dominated by the Kingdom of the Lombards, and after 774 by the Frankish Kingdom of Italy. The only institutions present were those the retreating Byzantine Empire had left behind. There was a duchy, but no established way of choosing a duke. The Venetians also had a tradition for local tribunes serving one-year terms. Each lagoon settlement therefore had a local elite of a number of established families which supplied those tribunes throughout these centuries. There was a church organization, separate from the church on the mainland, with a patriarch in Grado and half a dozen bishops across the Lagoon Islands. Chroniclers like John the Deacon and Andrea Dandolo like to paint an image of a united people with a single purpose. But it's also evident from their accounts that the reality was very different. The Chronicon Altinade contains many stories of these families, their hometowns, the tensions, conflicts, and fights between them. Unfortunately, many of these stories are of dubious veracity, and some are verifiably wrong, which is why the Altinade is such an unloved source. From what we can gather, the families which traditionally had supplied the local tribunes, and especially those from Heraclea, Equilio, and Metamauco, competed for primacy within the duchy. These dukes came from those families, and they managed to rule for as long as they could either dominate the other factions or somehow placate them. When they failed, violence ensued. Power was largely invested in the person of the duke. And the only way for an opposition to remove a duke was physical violence, mutilation, or murder. Early Venetian society was dominated by rampant factionalism, along fault lines which are not clear to us due to the scarcity and brevity of our sources. There was fierce competition for power, with vicious infighting and horrifying violence. But most often, we are left guessing at which tensions between which groups developed into conflict and bloodshed. Nevertheless, later Venice, the Serenissima, grew out of this mess. Before we close, I want to make a few notes on where I want to take this series of episodes on the early period of the history of Venice. We are more than halfway, but there's still some road to be covered. Venice had its own church, with a patriarch in Grado, and we need to catch up on how the Venetian church developed and what it came to mean. The semi-independent Venetian church was an important element of the Republic of Venice until the end in 1797. The relationship with the Franks on the mainland soon turned very complicated indeed, and there was a war and a peace, and the Byzantines returned to play an important role in all this. So we need to talk about war and peace with the Franks. Then St. Mark arrived by ship from Alexandria, and we cannot talk about Venice in the early Middle Ages and not talk about St. Mark. Finally, we need to talk about the ideology behind many of the Venetian chronicles. Most countries, and Venice became a country, have a national narrative, which usually contains an origin story. However, national narratives and origin stories don't have to be historically correct. and the Venetian national narrative was no different. Besides the historical facts as we have uncovered them, there's a multitude of myths and legends which the Venetians told and retold for 1,000 years about where they came from. So, at least 4 more episodes on the origins of Venice, or 5 or 6, who knows. Hopefully you find it as interesting as I do. That was today's episode of Venetian Stories. Thank you for traveling with me. The next episode will land whenever I have time to record it, but if all goes well, within a couple of weeks. If you happen to come to Venice, come join one of my tours about the history of Venice. You can find them at historywalksvenice.com.